Ah, yes, what a difference a week makes. Now this sultry sound permutates your ears, and we bask in the glory of a Falcons win, especially a win coming off of the loss that they had in Carolina. To break all that down, our intrepid Falcons reporter, Joe Patrick, in his weekly spot with me here. Make sure you follow Joe Patrick on football for the latest on the Falcons nearly every single day, wherever you get your podcast. Joe, how you feeling after this one, my friend? Can we just take a deep breath and just acknowledge that just felt good, my friend. It just felt good.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Chris. I mean, that song feels so much more appropriate this week. It felt wrong to play it last week. But, yeah, I mean, like, this is the week where you blast that song out the car, out the car window. You roll it down. You kind of just cruise in this nice sunny weather we've got here this evening on a lovely evening. And just, relax after a nice, easy, breezy Falcons win. It's kind of funny, Chris, that the team is 2-2 right now going into the bye. With two wins, I think, against in the games that I think coming into the season you would have chalked up as most likely the two losses if you were to have predicted the team to be 2-2 at this point. So kind of funny how it's all turned out. But, for considering everything that's happened, I think that you'll probably take it if you're a Falcons fan at this point.
What were the biggest differences you saw with the offense?
Oh, I mean, you know, it was just a lot sharper execution, first of all. I mean, I know that is a very lame thing to say because you can just say that anytime the offense performs better, but it's true. Like, you know, Michael Penix was much more accurate with his throws. So much just boils down to that, frankly, and just how much a quarterback being on or off on a given day can really affect the whole thing. And and not to say that there weren't like some aspects of the Falcons that contributed to Michael Penix playing poorly, but I do think that obviously he had a much improved performance. I think one of those things that helped him play better, though, Chris, was the fact that the offensive operation was cleaner. And it sounds like, having talked to the players in the locker room after the game, that Zach Robinson being on the field contributed to that improved offensive operation. And not just the fact they didn't take penalties or waste timeouts in that respect, but it felt like the play was getting in a lot sooner. I know they tried to kind of downplay that at the time coming out of that Carolina game, but I have to think that that was clearly, an objective for them going into this one, was to get to the line quicker so that Penix could have some more time to assess things. And I would just say, from a kind of tactical, if we are going to approach this from a tactical perspective, I think getting Drake London in the slot was really important. He spent more percentage. He had a higher percentage of slot snaps in this game on passing downs than he has any time this season. And maybe it may be the highest percentage of slot snaps in his career. I'd have to go back and look, but he was in the slot 50% of the time in this game. He averaged 39% slot snaps in games last season. And interestingly enough, Chris, he was in the slot 18.6% of the time against Carolina. That is among the lowest of his career outside of his rookie year. So maybe one of the reasons why they wanted to make a change in that receiver room, to make sure that they were getting their players in the best positions on the field. And I think you can't really argue with the results after one game.
How much of a difference do you think it makes that in the two games that they couldn't run the ball, the opposition had Derek Brown and Vita Vea?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. And I give A'shaun Robinson some credit. You know, he kind of gets under-talked about because Derek Brown is so good there in Carolina, but he had some big stops against them too. And yeah, Vita Vea is obviously a tough opponent to try to move. And, you know, maybe the Falcons were a little, I don't know if naive is too strong a word, but in thinking that they could just kind of run the ball up the middle kind of at him and win in some of those situations. Obviously they were much improved in the run game. I think that it also helped, you know, we talked about Drake London, some of the, you know, just getting players in the best positions to succeed, you know, and Drake London is his slot snaps. I thought the team was better in the run game in this game, not just because they were just force feeding the ball to Bijan, but because they were actually getting Tyler Algier involved. And I thought that we saw them kind of get in that rhythm of kind of both of them being in the game. Obviously, Algier used a little bit more toward the end of the game, but I think that that's a great opportunity to use him when you've kind of softened up that defense a little bit, and he can run at those guys with the full head of speed that he's got, and he can really deliver the blows we saw on that touchdown run. But I think that it's, you know, both of those guys contributing. And I thought that schematically the team was just really interesting with the way that they were mixing and matching some personnel groups to you know, get the best opportunities to run at this Washington defense. I wonder if it's something they could potentially do going forward.
Just how impressive have the two youngsters in the secondary been, Bowman and Watts?
Yeah, you know, this whole rookie class has really, you know, stood out and been the impact group that I think that we expected. But I think I think that at least we knew that they needed them to be impact players if this team was going to be successful. And I think the way that they're performing is kind of, you know, it coincides with also the Falcons defense just kind of being better than I think a lot of people thought they would be, especially this early on in the season. And those players have played a big role in it. And it's no surprise that how do I say this? Like the only way the Falcons defense was going to be as good as they've been so far was if these two players were playing as big of a role as they have been. And it's great that we've seen both of them really contribute in the takeaway phase of the game, which was something that, you know, the team kind of always says they want to be a focus, but I don't know how you can actually, you know, do that. It's more just a matter of the skill sets and traits that these players have coming to the fore when they're out there. And I think we see the ball hawking nature of both of these players, and especially Xavier Watts. You know, this last year with Justin Simmons back there, you know, in that defensive secondary, just didn't quite have the athleticism at this point in his career. And I think that showed several times. It cropped up last season in a painful way for the Falcons. And I think that right now we're just seeing a player in Xavier Watts who just has more mobility, literally just a rangier player in that position. And I think also in Jeff Ulbrich's scheme, he's just not asking too much of these guys. He's giving them very, you know, to borrow a Raheem Morrisism, some role clarity and just some very, you know, simple instructions. And they go out there and, to quote Jeff Ulbrich, use their superpowers. And that's exactly what we're seeing out of all these guys.
Now that Caden Ellis has an equally athletic defender next to him in Divine Diablo, Joe, how special has it been to watch those two as a tandem?
Yeah, it's been interesting, Chris, because I kind of put it out there during training camp. I put a tweet out saying that I felt like Divine Diablo was going to impress people. I didn't know that he was going to be as impressive as he has been through these four games. And I say that because you could just see the size on it. I mean, he is big, he's tall, he's long for a linebacker. And you could see, and he's also well built. He's a strong guy, and I think that he's obviously built up that strength, having been a converted safety as he was when he was in college at Virginia Tech. And you can just see, you know, it was that combined with the way that Raheem Morris and some of these defensive coaches would talk about him and talk about how smart he was, talking about how he's a guy who can wear the green dot. Obviously, Caden Ellis does that. But these two have really created a great tandem, and they're both very versatile linebackers, and that allows Jeff Ulbrich to do so many different things with regards to, you know, blitzing, showing blitz and bailing out of it. But we've seen, you know, we know that Caden Ellis is a linebacker that really excels at rushing the passer, but it can be even more effective when you can, you know, challenge an offensive line by, you know, stemming Caden Ellis down, making him look like he's going to blitz, but then he backs out and then Divine Diablo comes on the blitz, or vice versa. But just the fact that both those linebackers are so versatile and interchangeable in what they can do, I think it really gets the best out of both of them. And obviously, you know, kind of to the point that we've been talking about, they're obviously a key reason why the Falcons defense is, you know, like statistically one of the best defenses in football right now, which is just insane to even think about, considering we were talking about them needing to be basically league average. They've been well above that to this point.
Yeah, and to the tune of, I heard Ian Eagle and J.J. Watts say that the Falcons had the number one pass defense in the NFL entering the game. I was like, what? I was like, but then you go back, you know, even in the losses, you know, J.J. McCarthy didn't do anything. Bryce Young didn't do anything. Marcus Mariota didn't do anything. So in three out of the four games, even in a loss, the quarterbacks didn't do anything through the air. I mean, that's really what it comes down to as we're talking all things.
And Chris, Even in that Tampa Bay game, you wonder if that wasn't the first game of the season, you know, if Xavier Watts is actually coming away with a couple of those picks where he was really close, and they obviously dropped several more. It wasn't just him. There were other players involved as well. You wonder if that game happens again, if they wouldn't have a lot more success against that Tampa Bay offense. So it is a very good offense.
Well, to your point, I've been, you know, pounding the table on this. If he hangs on to those two balls, he'd have four picks right now through his first four games. As we're talking with Joe Patrick, Falcons insider here, 92.9 The Game. Check out Joe Patrick on Football, the podcast, for all your Falcons info. How shocked are you to see Romo kick again?
No, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I think they had to bring in competition to kind of light that fire again and keep that fire going. I think that that competition will be something that probably, you know, just sustains for quite a while. But wasn't surprised, especially, you know, like basically it was locked in on Friday once we saw that Ben Sauls, the kicker who they picked up and put on their practice squad, was not an elevation, that Parker Romo was going to be the kicker. And, you know, listen, he made his case. I don't know if he really proved anything in that game. I mean, there were chip shot field goals that he made. And so, but it's good to get the confidence, you know, of just having made the kicks. And we'll see when he is in a more of a pressure pack situation, how he does. But I would expect him to continue to be the kicker going forward. I would say, though, Chris, you know, just even beyond the kicking aspect, the special teams is something that I think that is still in need of refinement. It just feels inconsistent, whether it's the coverage units or the return units making mistakes here and there. And I hate it for Marquise Williams because he's a special teams coach, and it feels like some of the mistakes that are being made, it's hard to really chalk them up too much to coaching. It just feels like, you know, when a player is dropping kickoffs on return units, or you've got, you know, a 23-yard punt, or, you know, missed kicks even, like, I don't, you know, there's only so much the special teams coach can do. Not to say it's been perfect on that front, but I think that, you know, again, like kind of like with Penix last week in the offense, it's part coaching, it's part execution by the players, and so they're just going to need to get that tidied up. I will say, though, you know, I would expect Troy Anderson to be coming off of PUP at some point, you know, in the middle of this season. And I think, you know, for as much as he may be a disappointment in terms of the injuries and just really kind of not fulfilling what he could have been as a player, in that respect, I do think that he can be one of the best special teams players in the NFL. He's got that incredible ability to run and tackle in space. And so I think that the units can be much improved, many of the units, when he returns.
Before I let you go, what do you know about the schedule for the next few days? Because it's a while. I mean, going from playing on a Sunday to not playing until the next Monday night football game is a long time off.
Yeah. So I believe the way that Raheem Morris was talking suggested that the players would still be around the facility, not just yesterday, but also today. And then basically now, by the time now that we're talking, they've left the facility, and now their vacation basically starts. And, you know, they went back to the facility where they were given some guidelines by their coaches, by their performance staff, of things they needed to be doing and maintaining their bodies while they were on break. You know, when to get lifts in, what they need to be doing on their lifts and their training, because they still will be asked to do that just on their own time while they're on vacation, or, you know, maybe just hanging out at home since it's so early in season, whatever they choose to do. And so they will be gone. You know, maybe we see them at their alma maters potentially, if that's something they would like to do over the weekend, for a college football weekend, and they will have the weekend off. And then I would imagine they'd be back to work probably on Wednesday, but it could be even later. We haven't gotten the media schedule yet for what it looks like. Usually, if you're playing on a Monday, basically everything is bumped back a day, as you would think. So the normal big day on Wednesday would be on Thursday. But I would think that they'll be around middle of next week, so they get a full week off. It just that full week hasn't really started until right now.
Appreciate it as always, Joe. We'll talk to you next week as we get set for Buffalo. Should be a very interesting matchup.
Yes, yes, indeed. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
All right, that is our own Joe Patrick there. When we get back, let's do something on this show, Oren, we haven't done in a long time, and that's talk about the Braves. It's been a long time, but Grant McCauley's going to stop by next to put a bow on the Braves season. And hello, Brian Snicker. Are we managing the team next year, or what's the dealio with that? Before we get out of here, I want to remind you to join Sports Radio 92.9 The Game after each Falcons game for the Falcons Flyover. It's your first chance to call in and react to every Falcons game, brought to you by Ticketmaster. the official ticket marketplace of the Atlanta Falcons. That's the Falcons Flyover, immediately following every Falcons game this season on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And it's hosted by yours truly. We're back with Grant McCauley next.